Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Look, we have so much good football to get to tonight, and college football really taking the mantle as we get into Thanksgiving week with the first college football poll that came out. And to no one's surprise, the first college football playoff rankings, Alabama is number one, Notre Dame is second, Clemson is third, Syracuse is fourth, Ohio State is fourth, BYU debuts at number 14, Harmon's Northwestern Wildcats crack the top 10. So we have a crazy first college football poll. And really the controversy is, all right, I think the teams at the top we kind of agree on. And then there's teams from 5 through, let's just say, 18, where we raise our hand and go, hang on a second. How do you delineate 5 through 18? How can you do that? Now, normally, this is how it goes in college football playoff, right? The first playoff poll comes out, and we kind of have a general consensus with the teams at the top, and then we look and say, yeah, but how are you going to make sense of the rest of these teams? Normally, we still have half the season to go. Normally, there's still a lot of games left, and it parses its way down, and we get down to the end, and it's usually, these three teams are good, now we have to choose between these two teams for the final spot, and most of the time, it figures itself out. However, some teams only have three games left. You have some teams that are only going to play six games. How can you tell how good some of these teams are going to be when likely stubbing their toe is not going to happen, right, through the rest of the regular season? For instance, I'll just say, how good is Miami? Right? I think Miami is pretty good. Now, are they really good? Are they playoff good? They played one really good team, and they got thumped by them in Clemson. The other games, they're kind of escaping, but they're scoring points. Derek King is exciting. They seem to be a pretty good team, but I don't know how good they really are. And there's only a couple of games left to figure them out. USC is sitting at 3-0 at 18. They have three games left, right? That's it. They're going to play six games, Pac-12 championship game.
Clay Helton, baby.
Yeah, how good is USC? Look, USC fans are so torn right now. They're going, boy, we could go to the playoff, but we got to keep Clay Helton. Ugh, we could win three national championships, but it means we have to keep Clay Helton. I don't know what I'm rooting for. I don't understand. I mean, I don't know how good USC is. They're 3-0. I think they're okay, but they're only playing. They're playing a truncated schedule. So even at the end, if they're 6-0 and a win in the Pac-12 championship game, do they deserve to be one of the top four teams when other teams are playing 10 games? The thing is, you can't figure this out. You can't sit here and tell me at the end of the day, if Clemson finishes at the top and Ohio and USC is undefeated, can you tell me, hey, you know what? USC doesn't deserve to be there over a one-loss Clemson team. It's not like when they lost Trevor Lawrence, DJ Uiagalelei played terrible. He was fantastic. The guy started two games. He's thrown for more yards than Sam Darnold has the entire season. So it's not like they struggled with him. They lost a game. You're not going to be able to have any sort of line of demarcation to say, these are the best teams, and then here's everybody else. There's no way you can do it. So this is what is right now. It is crying out for college football to say, we're going to put 16 teams in the playoff. If you don't make the 16-team cutoff, I'm sorry. There's not a lot I can do for you. It's like being snubbed for the NCAA tournament. I'm sorry, but you could have proven you're one of the top 16 teams in the country. I can't do anything for that. Now, if you say, hey, we're as good as one of the top four teams and we didn't make it, whether you are Florida or Cincinnati or Northwestern, whoever it is, I can sit here and say, all right, that's an argument. But if you can't be one of the top 16, okay. This is why this works. You have so many teams that are playing different schedules, different numbers of games. It's harder to evaluate. We have 3 weeks to sit here and say, how do we move the playoffs up? USC is going to have to jump four spots a week if they're going to say, well, we got to give USC a chance because they're undefeated, and boy, they're college football royalty. This is screaming out for a 16-team playoff. And, of course, college football ain't going to do it, but they sort of have to. I mean, this is the way to service everybody. The little guys get in, all right? BYU gets in. Maybe Coastal Carolina gets in. Maybe not. But BYU will get in. Indiana will get in. Cincinnati will get in. You'll have the teams in that say, okay, let's see if these mid-major type schools can make a big dent here in the college football playoff. All the other sports did it, Mike. They all did it, and it all worked out great. And it's like college football has their head in the sand going, nope, we're going to still have this season because we have four or five people that don't want to bend and don't want to do anything different because they're 150 years old, and we've always done it this way. And this, and then they come to change in the NCAA like every 100 years is a change of some kind. So we're not going to get it, even though this is the year to have it. 1 through 16, let's play it.
My man, it takes them 5 to 10 years to issue a ruling on a rules infraction. How the hell you think they're going to stop jump over here to a different playoff system? Although they should realize they'd be jumping into a giant pile of money by doing so, which usually is the first thing in the decision-making process. Is this good for the business?
Is it a pile of money? Well, yes, then I'll jump in it.
That's exactly. Mm-hmm. There might be some leaves mixed in. It is the fall, by the way, especially if we're outside. But the idea being that, yes, jumping to an 8 or 16 team playoff made perfect sense. Well, we've gone past that point. You've announced a bunch of the would be bowl games are still hanging out there. Some of them are canceled. Some of them still forging full steam ahead. But when it comes to the playoff, I think this is going to be the year to recognize more than ever what we've said for as long as we've been doing this show, and probably many years before that, is remember all of these things are a TV show. And so this is the first look at the ratings as we stand right now for USC. You're like, yeah, I like Slovis. I don't know about the rest of it. And I certainly don't like that Helton guy. So they're 18th. So they moved down. But you're not going to have the same number of games, right? We don't have the same sample size from each of these teams. You're trying to be cognizant of all the different changes and breakneck speed for COVID issues, right? Wisconsin, they're going to have another game canceled, right?
They're already going to be ineligible to play for the Big Ten championship because they're not going to have enough games. Forget about winning on the field. No, you don't have enough games. Oh, okay. So, all right then. What are we playing for?
Yeah, so, and another game lost because of COVID issues from an opponent. So, again, from the larger discussion of, all right, how do we decide who's good, bad, and different? That, you know, we saw them lose to Northwestern. So Northwestern needs to win one of their final three games to have a spot against, presumably, right, Ohio State on the other side for the Big Ten title. And that's where we're at this juncture. But to your point, I'd love to see the expansion. It's not going to go, but we'll see if there's any wild swings in momentum and feeling from the polls as these last couple of weeks go, right? Otherwise, some teams will never really truly be able to state their case. And then you've got BYU just sitting out there at 14, raising their hand, going, we've told you we'd play almost anybody, almost anywhere.
Yeah. Not anybody anywhere. Almost anywhere if it works.
We've got a couple of exceptions, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, look, seriously, look at these teams just for a second. After Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, Texas A&M, Florida, Cincinnati, Northwestern. How do you delineate between those teams? They're all having terrific seasons. And the teams you would have the most questions about, Cincinnati and Northwestern, are undefeated. Florida and Texas A&M have losses. How do you do it there? Then you have Georgia at number 9 at 5-2 with two tough losses. Then Miami, Oklahoma, who just won a big one. Indiana's lost once. BYU is 9-0. Oregon's just started playing. They're 3-0. USC's just started playing. They're 3-0. It really is. There's no way. There's not enough time. We're going to be sitting here when the games are over in 3.5 weeks going, oh boy, there's going to be like 6 or 7 teams who are going to be hopping mad saying, how do we not get into the playoff? Now, some are going to eliminate themselves because when you get to the Big Ten championship game, the Pac-12 championship game, but you're also going to have other teams continue to win and say, hey, what about us? So it's not like everybody's going to lose. You're going to have teams continue to win. You're going to have one lost team saying, what about us? So, I mean, there's going to be no way. Instead of like one or two teams or one team going, oh, you screw it, there's going to be like maybe 8 to 10 teams that are going to say, this is not right. There's no way you can delineate, make any kind of case for these teams over us, for us over anybody else. I mean, it's fair both ways. And this is the year to do it. I mean, this is, it would be such a great, it would be a game-changing decision that everybody would universally just wrap their arms around and love, like it is one of those Popeye's frozen chickens. They would love it, love it, love it, love it. And still, you know, college football's not going to do it.
And I'll tell you this, just be ready to wrap your virtual arms around a lot of fan bases who are going to be salty because they're all going to be left out with no ticket to the dance.
Oh, but the Northwestern Wildcats sitting at number 8 right now, ready.
Saying we got a chance.
Pounce. See what I did? Cats pounce.
That was
cats
good.
Pounce.
I like that, yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Something really fun we're doing here at Fox Sports Radio over the course of the next 3 weeks. And you've seen this, you know, this type of thing happen before. NFL Network counts down the top 100 players of the year every year in sports. And this is an idea from our own Dan Beyer, who you hear. Dan sometimes fills in for one of us when one of us is out at night. Mm-hmm. And Dan's on all over the radio here at Fox Sports Radio. And he came up with the idea of, you know what? It's our 20th anniversary this year, Fox Sports Radio's 20th anniversary. So why don't we try to come up with and vote for the top 20 athletes of the past 20 years? Who are in the top 20 athletes of the past 20 years, and we're revealing it every week on The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Going to reveal four or five every week, all the way down as we count them from 20, all the way to number one. And we all voted on it. Mike and I, you and I both voted on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we get down to the end, you know, we'll tell you about our votes and who we voted for at the top. Although I have a sneaking suspicion, I think who I know is going to be number one, but you never know. But right now, tonight, the 20 through 16 was released. And so here are the top 20 athletes. We go 20, 19, 18, 17, 16 were released tonight. And they go in this order. At number 20 is Sidney Crosby. At 19, Barry Bonds. 18, Jimmy Johnson, the NASCAR driver, not the NFL on Fox guy. 17, Mariano Rivera. And 16, Steph Curry. So there's your top five, 20 through 16 right now as we count them down to number one. Sidney Crosby, number 20. Barry Bonds, 19. Jimmy Johnson, 18. Mariano Rivera, 17. Steph Curry, 16. Now, let me just say, despite the fact you know that I've said Steph Curry is a system point guard, right? He was a really good, he was an all-star caliber player. Steve Kerr shows up and suddenly he's otherworldly and the greatest player in the world. He is a system point guard, except he didn't go from being a nobody to being a good player in a system. He went from being a good player to being a superstar. But still, you have he has the NBA titles. He has the MVP. He's got everything you need. I put Steph Curry on my list right around here. I think I had him at like 14 or 15. Yep. But, you know, clearly he is one of the top 20 guys of the past 20 years. I'm just looking. Look, there's other NBA guys ahead of him. There's a few ahead of him that I have. But the last 20 years, you can't deny what Steph Curry's done. But the way people talked about him and covered him the past few years, his image is great. So they want to put him up at the top. It's, oh, look at what a great. Okay, he's a great shooter. He is a phenomenal shooter. He's accomplished some things. But on the list of pantheon of great players, the system in Golden State turned him into that superstar.
I'll tell you what, I look at these five, and when I went to check my list, I only got 40% right. So I'm already in the hole. I had Steph sitting at 15. So, all right, fine. That's all good. The only other guy I got on the list of these five was Jimmy Johnson. I had coming in at 20. Because of his dominance. My list, as we'll talk week to week, was more in the line of individual dominance. So the list was 60 long before it got trimmed down, and there were a lot of individual sports and competitors in there. And so I leaned a little into that as we went. Barry Bonds, I thought, was out of the game far too long for me to include in my 20.
Yeah, he stopped playing in 2007.
Yeah, I mean that was it. And a lot of his damage was done from 86 to 2000.
Yeah, I didn't even have him in my top 20.
Yeah, I didn't.
Because most of his career was the mid-80s, all of the 90s and the early parts. So when you think of 2000, I didn't have him there. But he broke the home run record in the 2000s. He became a big deal in 2000. So I can see where people voted for him there. But I didn't even have him in my top 20 list. We had about 60 or 70 people to choose from. I didn't even put him in my top 20.
Yeah, he was out. I didn't have Mariano in the top 20, and picking hockey players, Crosby didn't get the nod from me.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Baltimore and Pittsburgh set to play Thursday night for now, there's big COVID concerns with the Baltimore Ravens, as you know, they've been besieged by it the last couple of days. So it's kind of an iffy time right now. The NFL says the game is proceeding as of now, but certainly things are up in the air for this game. One of the big storylines this week, quarterback-wise, is the blame Lamar Jackson has been getting the past few weeks about how when there's big games, you're playing good teams, Lamar Jackson can't get it done. And this is why Lamar Jackson, in the long run, he's not going to work. He was everybody's MVP last year. Everybody loved him. But now, oh, Lamar can't win the big games. You know what? Time out for 1 second. As we told you before, Lamar Jackson, it's not about him suddenly sucking when it comes to playing really good teams. When all the good teams beat you and they're able to figure things out and figure out your quarterback, well, that's on you as a coach to try to get past that. Because when it doesn't matter, the good team, if it's a bad matchup, it's a bad matchup, right? If it's Tampa Bay and New Orleans, that's a bad matchup for Tampa Bay. Now, New Orleans may be better, but they are a bad matchup for what the Saints do. And if it's a bad matchup for the Ravens, I get it. But every good team they play finds a way to stop the Ravens. They know what to do. So a lot of it is coaching, meaning that they have to figure out some way to get Lamar Jackson loose so they can be able to get up and down the field and be able to win shootouts, be able to come from behind in games. And, you know, so that part of it we talked about a couple weeks ago. But the other part of it is this, Mike, is that you can be the best quarterback in the world and only a select few are going to be great no matter who you put up with them. Right, there's only a select few that are going to be great no matter what kind of wide receivers and running backs you have out there. Joe Montana was fantastic. All right, he was pretty good. Then Jerry Rice showed up, and boy, he turned into really something right there. Same thing with Steve Young. Steve Young was a really good quarterback, but when he finally ascended the starting job with San Francisco, hey, he had Jerry Rice, right? Great quarterbacks, very rarely can they do it with anybody, and that's when you know, hey, you have an all-time quarterback here. The Ravens need to make things easier for Lamar Jackson. How do you come off of an MVP season where the guy broke through and you can't add anybody? There is nobody that defensive coordinators are worried about on that team besides Lamar Jackson. Nobody. No, you're not worried about J.K. Dobbins. You're not worried about Mark Ingram. And, you know, who knows if they're even going to play. And wide receiver-wise, really, who are you worried about? You're worried about Dez Bryant? You worried about Hollywood Brown? I mean, really, he's got a great nickname, but come on. No one's worried about Hollywood Brown. I mean, there's no difference between a cool nickname and what a guy actually does than Hollywood Brown and what he does on the field. Yeah. Willie Snead is a guy. You have not been able to put any playmakers out there to make Lamar Jackson's job easy. When every defensive coordinator for a guy, how do we slow down Lamar Jackson? We can, because we don't have to worry about these guys. We can single cover all these guys. All these guys, they're just wide receivers. I don't know how you have this franchise quarterback, and for now 2 years, you've decided, hey, in the offseason, we're not going to go get him anybody. We're going to dabble with Dez Bryant, who was last time he played in the league was 3 years ago. How do you not say, this is our franchise quarterback, let's give him help? That's on the coaches. Suddenly, trust me, if he had one good wide receiver, if he had one really good tight end, he would be putting up numbers, and it would be, how can anybody stop this Ravens offense that rolls downhill? But they haven't gone out to get anybody, and that's a failure of the Ravens to get him some help. Because if you just had one or two guys out there that were, hey, we got to worry about it, things would open up immensely for the Ravens on offense. But when all you got to do is worry about the quarterback and not worry about any of these other guys catching 7-8 passes a week, well, guess what? You're gonna wind up winning these games if you can out-scheme and out-manage them. So this is really more on the Ravens for not doing enough to help him than it is, oh boy, Lamar Jackson just can't get it done.
Yeah, issues on the offensive line. Losing Stanley for the year is huge. Losing Nick Boyle, your blocking tight end, I don't know. We might be the first show to actually mention him, so I want a prize. Well, outside of Baltimore, of course. Boyle goes down, so there's a guy that you lose off of your line and you're blocking. The best receiver is Mark Andrews. But how much are you scheming for him? You've mentioned all the wideouts. Miles Boykin. Willie Snead IV is one of your go-tos. And your reclamation project of Dez Bryant, 5 targets this past week. He's a curiosity to see what he can be down the stretch, but there's no difference makers. The run game without Lamar Jackson having big games has been sputtering throughout the season. You know, a burst here and there from Gus the Bus or maybe a little bit of Dobbins, but certainly not the consistency of years past. Defense has held up its end of the bargain. for the most part, but this is just goes back to what we're talking about with Tampa Bay. It's like, all right, if you're going to assemble talent as Tampa Bay did, but something's not working, it's time to figure out what the mold is, smash it with a hammer, and rebuild, right? If you're not going to use the play action pass, you're just killing yourselves because that offensive line's not good enough to hold up, right? You have to establish some semblance of a run. With Baltimore, you've realized you don't have guys that can gain separation, so it's time to adjust as best you can, not to mention saying, hey, what's our cap number look like for next year where we can actually go add a viable playmaker? They'd look a lot different if Antonio Brown was running around there right now, I tell you that.
Oh, sure. And that's why I thought, well, they're going to get him. They're going to get Antonio Brown because they have to. Because they got no team is more desperate about getting something than the Ravens, and they couldn't wind up doing it. I mean, that's why. I mean, look, you think all great quarterbacks – Tom Brady was great when he had Randy Moss, right? He was – before that, was he a really good quarterback? Did he throw – no, he didn't. All right, Peyton Manning, they kept giving him – whether it was Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, T.Y. Hilton, they always went out and got him help. All the great quarterbacks, right? They all get him help. Russell Wilson had Doug Baldwin for a few years, and then, okay, things stopped. Now here comes DK Metcalf. We're going to give you a guy to throw to. And every team knows when we have the franchise guy, we get him help. And it's like the Ravens said, no, we're just going to throw a bunch of guys out there and see that it works. It's not working. Not working, 100%.
No, that's it, man. You got to go and find yourself some talent and not dismiss. Guy was the MVP. And now he's trash after a couple of games.
Nah,
are they in
right.
trouble? You're damn right they're in trouble. But I wouldn't put it all at the feet of Lamar Jackson.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So the last couple of days has been all about a couple of different quarterbacks in the NFL, and one of them has been Taysom Hill, who took over for Drew Brees this week in a pretty shocking decision. We all expected Jameis Winston to be the starting quarterback. We said on the show, all right, Jameis is going to get about 65% of the snaps, but they'll keep Taysom Hill in because the guy's a weapon. Maybe he plays 35% of the time at quarterback. And suddenly Steve Spurrier is saying, oh, I can't wait to watch the Saints. They're playing two quarterbacks. It happens in the NFL now. I was ahead of my time. Early 2000 didn't work. Yep. But Taysom Hill showed on Sunday what nobody thought he'd be able to do. No one thought he was going to be as dynamic as he was. And for everybody who thinks Drew Brees is just going to waltz back in to be a starting quarterback, here's a little hot take theater for you. The longer Drew Brees is out, the harder it's going to be for him to reclaim his starting job. I know there's talk that maybe he's going to be back in 3 weeks with, what does he have, 85 broken ribs, but he can come back in 3 weeks. Like, oh, he's going to be back soon, he'll be back soon. It will be a really hard decision. You know, Sean Payton and Drew Brees, it'll be a really difficult decision. But Taysom Hill is, right now, he can do more than Drew Brees. At this point, Drew Brees is kind of like, you know, we talked about this with Jason Lockenfora. He's kind of like an elite game manager. That's where Brees is at this point in his career. It's his final year in the NFL. He is an elite game manager. And the offense is not dynamic. Brees doesn't go downfield at all. And certainly, he's not the threat running the football like Taysom Hill is. And what did we see out of Taysom Hill on Sunday? Guy had never thrown more than 18 passes his entire career in the NFL. Well, he got past that. He ran for 51 yards and 2 touchdowns. The offense looked dynamic. And I don't even know if Alvin Kamara caught a pass on Sunday. This is how good the Saints offense ran. Yes, they scored points with Drew Brees, but this is a different kind of animal right now. Taysom Hill played terrific. He has 2 more games like this. I don't know how you go back to Drew Brees and you tell the team, yeah, this is what's going to keep us winning. Because the way he makes plays, the extra threat he is being able to run, you're talking about, I mean, I give you the stats from Sunday, and I said, hey, who do you think is a guy that threw for 260 yards, ran for 50 and 2 touchdowns? You would say, oh, that's Lamar Jackson. No, that's Taysom Hill. All right? I mean, that's Taysom Hill. 230 through the air. He had 5 incomplete passes, and he ran for 2 touchdowns. That is a Lamar Jackson stat line. It's going to be really difficult to say, okay, Drew, here it is. Now, everybody is kind of on the same page in New Orleans, where if they did it, Taysom Hill would say, hey, it's okay. He thinks it's going to be his job next year. Drew Brees, you got everybody who would be saying, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. But in the end, you're trying to win championships. And when you can say, when you can you really look at this team team and say, we're better off with Drew Brees at quarterback than we are with Taysom Hill? I mean, that's the question that Sean Payton's got to be able to say, I'm okay with that, and going back to Drew Brees knowing he would be selling the team short. Two more games like this for Taysom Hill, and he has to keep that job when Drew Brees is healthy coming back.
Yeah, I don't see how you could make a switch. Like, you've just got to be giddy at offensively. All of the wrinkles that you've been sitting on, that you've been able to deploy 5, 6, 8 times a game with Taysom Hill, the running back, wide receiver, tight end, you now get to have in your pocket every down he's on the field. There's great value to that, keeping defenses off balance. Now, not all of them are going to be the Atlanta Falcons, who we thought were starting to show signs of life and then got stomped once again, and they're all banged up, right? Big play to Calvin Ridley. He's got a foot injury. Julio Jones has a hammy that might keep him out this week. This is more for your fantasy purposes, adding mix into the mix here for you as well. But when we look at what the Saints could be, you saw he was able to force feed Michael Thomas pretty well. And even on a couple of occasions, you saw Michael Thomas recognize, hey, this guy's got a better arm than Drew Brees, because he didn't react well enough, right? The ball that whizzed through his hands, it was like, oh, okay, there's some fire coming out here. And it, timing and trying to get to the, you know, backs out of the backfield or the short passes, a little bit of touch that needs to be learned. Well, that's the evolution of a quarterback. But what he's able to do under center, I'm curious to see how it plays. Am I a believer in it long term? I'm still skeptical, but the starting point is pretty darn good from what we saw on Sunday. So we'll see what the next step is. Obviously, Alvin Kamara has to be a bigger part of your offense as you go down the stretch, but you still won comfortably and move, as we say, succeed and proceed. Color me intrigued.
Yeah, it's not like I could just give it to him now after one game. You know, I can't just, but certainly this game went way better than I thought it was going to be. I thought this is going to be a little bit more difficult because, Taysom Hill's never played an entire game at quarterback. The guy's 32. Look, friend of the show, Taysom Hill. We've had him on a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a little bit more of an adjustment. There was no adjustment. Taysom Hill came in, and this is where you tip your cap to Sean Payton and say, okay, he knew what he was doing. Even though the team was split on Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston, he knew what he was doing. And they went out, and they won a game and won it in a dominant style. Two more games like this, and Drew Brees will kind of get flaccoed, right? Which is the term for a guy's going to keep being injured even though he's healthy enough to come back because another guy has taken his job. Because that's happened with Lamar Jackson, right? Lamar Jackson takes over for Joe Flacco when it was going to be a slow passing of the torch to Lamar Jackson. But Flacco gets hurt. Lamar Jackson comes in and plays really well right away. So suddenly what happened? Flacco was hurt a lot longer than we thought he was going to be hurt. Joe, no, you're still hurt, Joe. No, but I feel fine. No, your arm's broken. I'm sorry, we can't put you out there. So Flacco was hurt for a lot longer. Finally, he was healthy enough, but Lamar Jackson had established himself and Flacco wasn't getting the job back, so he wound up leaving to go to the Denver Broncos. That's what's going to happen with Drew Brees. If it gets to that point, it's going to be, Drew, let's save some face, and the right thing to do would be to say, you know, we're still hoping you recover, and we're still going to, you know, check in on you and everything. Hope you can come back and play. But while Taysom Hill is playing well, there's no reason to rush Drew Brees back in. The only reason to do it is because Drew Brees wants to say, blank you, this is my last year and this is my team. And I understand that because the guy's been a Saint for so long. But again, what's best for the team? Is it best to put Drew Brees back out there and try to struggle a little bit more to win? Or, hey, Taysom Hill gives you something that Drew Brees never had. You got to make that tough decision. But that's how it'll go. If Taysom Hill does that, that's the way the Saints, hey, listen, Drew is still banged up. You know, we found some more broken ribs. Look, they find new broken ribs on Drew Brees every day. At first it was 3, then it was 8, now it's 45. They will find a way to push it so everybody gets to save face and it's not a controversy. That's it will go. He will get flaccoed if Taysom Hill has two more games like this.
Well, but that's just it, right? Saying, hey, we're pushing through, and look, he's recovering and all these things. He's superhuman. He's Wolverine, and his wounds are healing quickly. That's all good and fine and good, but is he really, right? I mean, how taped up is he going to have to be? Duct tape, flak jackets, and everything else. You got a healthy QB, again, now just a QB, in Taysom Hill, who threw the ball very well. far better than I think most of us expected. Hiccups, yes, but why rush Drew Brees back? I mean, loyalty is important. Don't get me wrong. And what Brees and Peyton have had these 15 years in New Orleans is incredible, without a doubt. But you also have to look at, you know, you're beholden to trying to win and put your best product on the field this year. I don't know that a recovering from being fully broken in the midsection, Drew Brees is the way to go.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.